Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the News Roundup on WCAI. I'm Catherine Iden, filling in for Steve Junker. This is our weekly News Roundup, where we discuss some of the top local news stories of the week with my colleagues from the print and digital media. Joining me here in studio this morning, Jeff Spillane from the Cape Cod Times. Good morning.
Good morning, Catherine.
Thanks for coming in today.
You're welcome.
This hour, we will also hear from Brittany Bowker from the Martha's Vineyard Times, Josh Balling of the Nantucket Inquirer and Mirror, Bill Evel of the Vineyard Gazette, Casey Myers from the Provincetown Banner, and we'll check in with Tim Wood of the Cape Cod Chronicle and our own WCAI climate environment reporter, Eve Zukoff. Jeff, let's take a look at some of the top stories this week. I want to start with one, a well-known horse farm in Falmouth where there are allegations of animal cruelty and an investigation ongoing.
Yeah, Catherine, this is a disturbing story, as you had mentioned, out of Falmouth. It's Smithfield Farm, which is a farm on Sandwich Road in East Falmouth. It's under investigation by the Massachusetts Society for Prevention to Cruelty of Animals after they received several complaints about emaciated animals at the farm. The farm is where horses are boarded. They offer lessons, and they also sell horses. And the animal cruelty investigation was opened on Tuesday when the MSPCA did come down here to visit. The investigation will include an interview with the owner as well as some of the folks who filed the complaints. And we'll know very soon whether or not they're going to determine whether or not sufficient evidence is there to bring animal cruelty charges. But just for a little bit of background as to what happened here, there have been several complaints. Recently, there's been many Facebook posts with photos of these emaciated animals. And one of the persons who filed a complaint said for about a year there have been some issues there. And this isn't pretty, but she had said last month people were seeing horses lying dead, goats lying dead, paddocks were leaking, horses were sitting in the standing in the mud with no food or water. So you can imagine how horrible that was. Another person who filed a complaint says there were holes in the roof, frequent flooding in the barns, infested with rats, and every inch was covered with mold and rot. Mm. And just last month, the horses were involved, and the owner is involved with a therapeutic program. And there was a disabled man who was riding one of the horses at an event in Yarmouth. And this particular person said there was a big saddle, which kind of appeared weird, but it apparently was on there to cover the horse and his appearance, underweight and emaciated. And the horse went down with the man on him. So
not good.
Not good at all. And according to a spokesman from the MSPCA, it didn't appear as if there any of the horses were taken away from the property on Tuesday. We'll learn more about that in the coming days. And it just happens there's no boarding facilities available here in the Cape. They would have to go up to Methuen, which is almost on the New Hampshire border.
Right. And I think what was interesting, too, about this is the MSPCA does do these animal cruelty investigations, but they don't do a ton of them. They really, I think, have to pick what seem to be, I'm guessing, the most egregious because they get, you know, 1,500 or so complaints every year, but they can only do
25.
Yeah.
25. So they really have to be, as you said, really egregious.
And this was one of them.
And the owner is a woman named, I believe, Ms. Janice Foster. Mm-hmm. If found guilty, it's a felony in Massachusetts. You can spend up to 7 years in prison and a fine up to $5,000.
Right. So we'll be following that story.
Yeah, we will.
I want to go to a story out of Sandwich, and actually this is kind of a story that's evolving, and that's due to oysters being stolen, and this has happened in other towns recently as well.
It has, and you know, if there's ever a Cape Cod mystery, this is one of them.
Yeah.
About 4,000 oysters, not fully grown, immature oysters, I call them, were stolen from Mill Creek, which is near the Sandwich Boardwalk, and this happened 2 weeks ago, I believe 2 weeks ago today. And the town has been cultivating the shellfish, as many towns have, not only to help clean the waters, but is also to have a stock for licensed shellfishermen to harvest.
We call it a put and take. They put them there, but then you can take them if you have a license,
that's right?
Right.
Yeah. That's right. And they do take about 2 to 3 years to mature as they cultivate them. And actually, Sandwich, as part of its agriculture program, has about 100,000 oyster seeds per year. But what's odd about this, Catherine, is none of the oysters that were stolen are of legal size, so they couldn't sell them. And one of the quotes from the director of natural resources in town, which I thought was interesting, said, if somebody thought they were going to have a picnic, well, there's not enough meat in the shells.
Yeah, these are too little.
Why do you have them? You know, or some of you just probably didn't know.
And they're not edible either because they're possibly contaminated,
They are.
Right?
They were taken from water that is considered unsafe for harvesting because of high levels of fecal coliform bacteria. So that just adds to the mystery. They're too small. They're in a place where you really want to get oysters for consumption.
Right.
So the Mass Environmental Police are investigating this case. And as a result of this theft, there may not be a harvest this year for recreational shellfish or people with licenses in Sandwich. And now that because of the theft, there are cameras and lights to monitor where they are in the creek.
Wow. So, and the town of Sandwich has been working for a long time to get this shellfish bed installed, as you said, for both the water cleaning properties, but also to have this area for local shellfishermen to get these locally grown shellfish. And so this really is a blow to that project.
It is. And you know, I live in Mashpee, and they've been doing it for several years, and it's a big event. I mean, people look forward to it.
Yeah,
so it's
a lot of fun. And there have been there's been other reports of other towns having similar problems, as far out as on the Outer Cape in Wellfleet, Barnstable in Mashpee. There's been problem with thefts as well. And these oysters they're not in the sand yet. They're in these floating cages. So they're,
cages.
I guess in a sense, they are accessible if you are of a mind to break the law.
Right.
But, you know, it will be interesting. I thought it was interesting, too, heard reports that in Sandwich, the Natural Resources Department was saying, listen, if you bring these oysters back, we'll say no questions asked.
Exactly.
Get them out of potentially the market where they could hurt somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you eat a contaminated shellfish, you could get very ill. You could even die.
Right. And there was a case very similar to that in Falmouth, I believe, last year, where some were sold.
Right. And, we've had reports of this around the Cape over the last few years. But no leads. Nobody's come forward.
No leads as of right now. But we're going to continue to follow up on that.
All right. That's oysters being stolen in Sandwich.
Yeah.
I want to turn now. We are right on the cusp of this back to school season. And school bus drivers had a little lesson of their own the other day. And that's about vaping and how to identify it with teens and then and kids of all ages, actually, what to do about it.
That's right. I've been covering this for quite a bit lately. I also cover the town of Barnstable, which has become a big issue there. But the use of vaping products, which includes a lot of flavored products. Juul is the most popular vaping device.
Like the brand name.
It's been declared an epidemic among youth, becoming a major problem here in the United States and elsewhere, I would imagine. So the Barnstable County Department of Human Services has said, and these are some staggering statistics, from 2017 to 2018, just 1 year, they've seen an increase in youth vaping, 50% in middle school ages. Now, I guess that's what could be 12.
I know. I'm thinking, how young is a middle schooler by these standards? 11, 12? Really young.
And an 80% increase in high school students, which to me was just, oh my gosh, wow. So the Department of Health of Human Services of the county on Wednesday had a program for about 250 bus drivers, which I thought was very interesting because they actually are on the front lines of seeing what these children are doing.
They really are.
And just to educate them a little bit about the youth vaping problem, what are some of the trends and how to spot them. So if you're driving the bus and you have a bus full of kids on the way to school and you think something's happening, you can alert the school officials. And the county is actually, as the beginning of the school year, which as mentioned, starts next week in most places, they're kicking off a new campaign called Escape the Vape, where this county department has developed a toolkit for after the schools reached out and said, hey, how can you help us with this? So the executive director of this organization did present to the bus drivers and the Cape Cod Collaborative, which is responsible for a lot of student transportation, said, we want to make sure that our drivers are informed about this and what they need to look for. And some of this really is incredible, Catherine.
Well, it's not – and that's the thing, too. It's not at all like cigarettes where it's really – the smell. It's very obvious. It's a specific type of, you know, the visual is there. I mean, there's two things going on here, which is what I gleaned from the article in the Times, and that is Vape pens are easy to kind of disguise. Mm-hmm. And then the side effects, we're learning more and more about what the side effects are. Tell us more about what the vape pens can look like and how they can be hard to spot.
Well, first of all, they told the bus drivers, hey, look for puffs of vapor if you can, and look at the tapes, and then you can alert staff. Mm. But some of the accessories in the vape pens, they look like USB devices, some maybe like a small tape recorder. But what I found very interesting here is that there are some clothing and backpacks that are designed
for
to
vaping.
Hide this. Yeah. Yeah. One of them is a hoodie that said they look like a normal hoodie, but the strings use as tubes to smoke. I haven't seen one, but I'll look now.
Yeah, and it will make you look twice, you know, at kids who maybe chew on their mm-hmm. clothes a little bit, as kids sometimes do. It's going to make you take a second look.
That's right. And they also say keep, if you smell something sweet, that's a sign as well. The flavored tobacco products are the ones that are really popular among that age group. Watermelon, mango. There are actually thousands of flavors. And the town of Barnstable, actually, on July 29th, has new regulations where flavored tobacco products cannot be sold in any store that allows 21 years old or under to come in. It's been quite a big story there in Barnstable. And in each Juul flavor pod, which is a little thing you put in your little vaping device, has the same amount of nicotine as in a full pack of cigarettes. And some of these kids, Catherine, are going through them in a half hour.
And that's causing problems, right?
Major health problems. A lot of them, you know, because this is so new, we won't know the full extent of this for several years. But they're telling parents to also keep an eye out. Some of the things you may notice if your child is using these vaping devices is nosebleeds. They may want less caffeine. I don't know what... If kids that age drink coffee, I guess it's soda and Red Bull and all that, because they already feel as if they're energized enough and have a fast heartbeat. And also, they tend to add more seasoning to foods because this vaping on a regular basis tends to stunt your sense of taste.
And I wonder if that's permanent. No, do we know?
I don't know.
We don't know yet.
Don't know.
And there's more serious problems that can happen too. Lung problems they're finding
popcorn
now.
Lung is something that happens. Yeah.
So definitely an important kind of lesson for bus drivers, as you said, who are on the front lines to maybe spot some of this behavior and then help parents and teachers and students understand maybe the risks of what they're doing.
This is a real emerging health issue here.
I want to turn now to a kind of a transportation story, and that's out of Bourne. And Bourne joined the MBTA a few years ago, and that's because there's this hope that the commuter rail will come to the Cape. But we're not exactly any closer to seeing that as a reality. And there's a lot of money in cost to being a member of the Massachusetts Bay Transportation Authority.
Yeah, you think of members of the MBTA, you think of Metro West, Quincy, you know, places closer to the city. But in 2014, in hopes that commuter rail would come to the tracks, which are already in place, coming to Buzzards Bay, the Cape Flyer operates on them, would somehow revitalize commuter rail coming to Bourne and really providing a big boost to the village of Buzzards Bay and maybe generate some transit-oriented development, which is very popular these days. You see these mixed-use communities springing up around transit stations.
Mm-hmm.
And they took the chance. They joined back in 2014. But as you had mentioned, it really hasn't moved forward yet, but there's still hope.
Yeah.
4 years later, there's still no service, but the town officials say, hey, you know what? Joining that was the right thing to do. Gives us a seat at the table as plans are being developed. And with the advent of the new South Coast Rail Project, there is a chance that something could happen there with a link. In 2014, when this was signed, it was right before a lot of MBTA problems started emerging. That winter of 2015, which, remember, it never stopped snowing.
Yes.
That was a problem. And up until right now, with all the derailments, et cetera. So the hope is that this service can be restored, possibly as part of the South Coast Rail Project, with a connector train, which would go from Buzzards Bay to Middleborough, which seems to be the hub that's developing for South Coast Rail, which would allow commuters then to transfer their train to South Station.
Right. So it is that piece, at least, is a little more of a possibility than in the meantime. Bourne officials did say to the paper that they're happy that they're part of the group. They're paying $40,000
a year
for this, but that they say it's worth every penny because they want to be able to advocate to get that train
stop. And they say, you know, we didn't expect it to happen overnight, so it's going to take a while.
So it's some long-term
planning. Worth the investment.
That's right. And that is Jeff Spillane of the Cape Cod Times. Jeff, Thank you so much for talking about some of the top news stories of the week. We need to take a break. Stay with us. We have more top stories from around the region to come.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.